Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome back to the OMG MotoGP podcast. We are getting ever nearer to the start of the season. Thank you for all the kind comments as well on the new team look. Really excited to have Amy and Renita on board as well. You'll be seeing a lot of them as we get into our race previews and reviews throughout the season. But we have the opportunity right now to sit down with Dorna's Chief Commercial Officer, Dan Rosamundo. Really excited for this one. So Keith and I caught up with him a little earlier. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time to join the show. Whereabouts in the world are you joining us from?
It's a pleasure. I am in wintry New Jersey, home for a week, seeing the family, who is obviously the kids are thrilled. They had a snow day yesterday. We're home in New Jersey for a week before I go to the Doha test this coming weekend.
Oh, very nice. Now, I did say new Chief Commercial Officer. Obviously, you've been in the role for a little while. Well, not a little while now, but over a few months. How have those first opening months been with Dorna and experiencing, I suppose, two-wheeled motorsport and the pinnacle of it?
Yeah, it's been a little over 10 months. I mean, I feel like it's a baby. When do I start saying years? At least I'm gone from weeks.
Yeah.
To months. It's been a little bit over 10 months, and it's been frankly exhilarating in a lot of ways, both personally and professionally. I have told people, and I will say this with all honesty and without remorse, I was not a motorsport fan before I started this, and I've started now dabbling in all different motorsports. So I was watching the NASCAR series on Netflix last night. So yeah, no, but it's been a great 10 months. The organization's fantastic. I think the sport is wonderful and, from so many reasons. So it's been a whirlwind, to say the least, but it's been great. It's been really great.
I was going to use another analogy. I was going to say into the fire pit, I would suggest, from where you are at the moment. I mean, Chief Commercial Officer, I mean, that wraps up quite a lot of jobs that have got to be done. And I think with Dorna and MotoGP in a lot of marketplaces since Valentino Rossi retired, it's kind of flatlined. And there's a lot of people, promoter-wise, that are concerned about where we're going commercially. Yeah. And that is a massive issue, particularly here in Britain. I've got to say, 45,000 people through the gate last year is a major worry.
Yes.
Silverstone having just signed an extra 10 years on their Formula One contract. But I can almost see, you know, here, it not going for very much longer in this country, if I might stick my neck
out. You can stick whatever you want
with
out.
That kind of patronage, when you've only got 45,000 people coming through the gate on race day, that's a serious problem. I mean, in my day, it was 120,000 people.
At Donington or Silverstone?
Well, it was at Silverstone for me back in the day. But, I mean, I think that Donington, you know, MSVR, which is Jonathan Palmer, I mean, he's not a slow man on his feet, that's for certain. JP will be looking to see if he can pick off anything that's left over. But to be honest, Silverstone is a fantastic venue.
It is.
And Stuart Pringle and the team for Formula One do a fantastic job, but they seem to have had, you know, more opportunity with Formula One. It's a bigger sport, so they're, you know, I think we're all fairly agreed on that. It is a bigger sport. It's not a bigger spectacle. That's a fact. MotoGP is a bigger spectacle than Formula One, in my view. I know I might be a bit biased. But all the same, it's a big task when you've only got an interest factor of 45,000 people. I mean, I don't understand, and you being fairly new to the sport, have got a fairly uphill slope to try and turn that around. I wonder how you might be looking at doing it.
I think the first challenge with any new role, but something that I've acutely identified here, is you have to recognize where the challenges are. You can't just go whistling by the graveyard. That's not something that is helpful to anyone. You have to actually, and you can't just say, oh, it'll be fine, or it's someone else's challenge. I think that we have, while we have Silverstone in a not the optimal situation, we've had other places that we have record crowds. So sometimes we have to sort of, it's the ones that are the problems or the challenges that you have to focus more time on. And we've started to do that. I mean, we're looking at different ways to bring more people into Silverstone. I wouldn't say it's the best time of the year for them or us. I think it's a challenge. August is not the easiest month, even though it's supposedly warm. I've had the coldest I've ever been was a summer in Silverstone. I think we have to identify what that opportunity is, because the UK is such a, and it's got a great bike history, and we have to identify that. We've identified that market as one that we have to work on acute challenges in that area, so that we can make it more, we can have that spectacle seen by others. And you'll see some, we've done some work, we're doing some more, and you'll see, I think you'll see the fruits of the labor. I'm not sure if it's going to be this year, but in the next year to come, I think you'll see it, because we have put our head down on that market. And the United States is another market. There's a few, we have our core markets, Keith, Iberia, France, pretty darn strong there. Then we have our opportunity markets, the US, the UK, Germany, India, Southeast Asia. Those are where we feel like we are under-commercialized, or at least under-viewed or under-commercialized. Sometimes those go hand in hand. So we have to identify them, and we have identified them. We have to then just get to the job of building out the sport and the business.
I mean, are we moving east or west? Ah. I mean, do you feel that you've been brought in as an American? Obviously, the American market is huge,
yes,
but we've never really tapped it. I mean, it's just never really happened in America. Indy was a strange venue for us, brilliant venue for anything pretty much other than motorbikes. Laguna Seca, everybody loved Laguna Seca, but it's unsafe and it can't be rectified in that particular way. There's some fantastic racetracks in America. Moto America, Wayne Rainey's set up. Yeah, they go to some great places, but we could never go to them because they're too dangerous. They don't reach the criteria. Yes. So we're kind of screwed on that front. But I mean, as an American, do you feel that maybe Dorna, who have been accused of being Spanish-centric for years, even though I think Dorna have done a fantastic job with our sport over a great period of time, they just seem to have run out of steam. And I know that Harry and I discussed this many times about the drive to survive effort that was made on the cheap and done terribly, a massively missed opportunity for quite a large marketplace there. But do you feel that you've been brought in as an American really to enhance the American side of things, or is it really a global situation? Are you picking off specific areas specifically?
Yeah. Oof. God, that is the existential question, frankly. And it has been... I do think the alluring part of the role, and it still is, and it's still what I think is the massive opportunity, is that we are a global sport. There's so many sports out there that claim to be global sports that really are just one country, and they sort of resonate maybe in a couple more. Their players might be from other countries. But we actually talk the talk and walk the walk. So we have to kind of go back with your metaphor. I need to put the coal in the pipe and, you know, get the engine going again. And I think there's kindred spirits inside of Dorna who recognize that, Keith, to be quite honest. I think, yeah, an American was probably a profile they wanted, but I really, I give all the credit to Carmelo and Enrique and Carlos is that they really wanted someone who was going to look at things differently, who was going to energize different parts of the business, who was, and what I, maybe they didn't expect, you know, listen, I'm a very blunt person in so many ways. I'm from New Jersey. I worked at the NBA. I worked in New York all my life. I don't suffer fools very well. So I come in and I say, listen, these are the things that we have to work on. And there's not been a no yet. There hasn't been a no. There's been like, yeah, let's go. Just do it. Go. So I've got a lot of support, but I also have to, it's got to be an evolution, not a revolution, because to your point, the sport is really good. I mean, the sport is really good. Like, it's exciting. And if you like, F1 might be bigger, but I would say that if you were a racing fan of both, you probably think our racing's better. So what I have to do is I have to be that evangelist for the sport in a lot of ways in the business community. We do have to pick our spots though, Keith. I will say that we can't be everywhere. We just can't physically capture every piece of data and take on every single project in every market everywhere. It's not physically possible. We have, you know, 400 odd people at Dorna. We put on 21 GPs a year. That's a spectacle. That's a size thing in itself. So what I'm also recognizing is prioritization. And I do think the United States, only because, and this is me, the sports fan, I think this sport is kind of made for the U.S. market. It's 45 minutes. Our races are 45 minutes. It's balls to the walls. It's like courage and heroism. So from that perspective, yeah, I would. Is there a lot of money in the U.S.? Of course. But like, I do think like the American people just say, whoa, what is this? So I've got to pick my spots. But yeah, the U.S. and Southeast Asia, because of the bike market and the fandom there, is just off the chart. The avidity is like ridiculous. So it's got to be a little bit of both. We got to walk and chew gum.
In that vein then, though, much like Formula One, you know, they battled with America for quite some time, then it fell off the calendar, then Austin, Texas came and slowly rejuvenated, and now that's become a real mainstay of the F1 calendar, at least, and then Drive to Survive helped really boost it in the American market, and now we have three American circuits on the grid.
For now.
Vegas and Miami.
For now.
Well, it sounds like, well, Chicago's gearing up. Who knows? Maybe another one. But in that similar vein, especially in MotoGP with, you know, Trackhouse coming into MotoGP for this year, could we, is this the beginning of actually seeing not only an American team, next up an American rider, next up more American tracks and an even enlarged calendar? Can you see the calendar expanding to what it already is?
Oof, that's, well, let's take it. Let's take that.
Sorry, I chucked a lot at you there. Sorry.
Four questions. There were like four questions in there, Harry. It's early. Go. It's early here. Let me.
Now, the reason why he's put them in there, Dan, is because he doesn't get a chance when I'm yakking.
Yeah, that's true.
Well done. No, all right. So let's start with the American rider. We would love an American rider. It's not something you can snap your fingers at. It's a build. We've got to work with Moto America. We got to work with Trackhouse to get it. You know, would it probably galvanize it, the market, more quickly? Yes. Is it a safety issue? Yeah. You just can't fake it. You can't fake it and put an American who's not ready for MotoGP on that bike. So we are going to work on that, but it's a little bit of a longer burn than other things. In terms of the calendar, I think we're pretty happy with the size of the number of races, the number of events that we have. Will we look at some optimization inside of that calendar? Absolutely. Is there interest from U.S. Entrepreneurs to build circuits that will be homologated for us? Absolutely. And would we expand? Yeah, all of that. So yes, we would. I figure out. And then, look, the Drive to Survive phenomenon that helped Formula One is hard to replicate. You know, it's hard to replicate. If you go to Netflix right now, Harry, and go to sports documentaries, look at them all. But there's only been one that's kind of had this cultural phenomenon, has been a cultural phenomenon like Drive to Survive, and actually amped up the business. So I think that's hard.
And I would say actually that was also due to the pandemic. A lot of people forget, because everyone suddenly stuck indoors with nothing to do. So what's on the telly? Oh, I'll see this F1 Drive to Survive thing. So yeah. In everybody else's defense, that I think that people overlook that is actually what helped F1 quite a lot.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't want to say anything, but you know, March 14th is coming around. We had this global pandemic 4 years ago. The Chiefs and the 49ers win the Super Bowl 4 years ago. I'm just saying, maybe we can. No, I'm kidding. I think that helped as well. But for what I'm, and I think this goes to Harry's question too, is we want to get things right. Okay, we want to get things right. We don't want to be a. I think stunts are cute, but I don't think stunts have longevity. So when we look at the U.S. market, it's okay. How do we get things right? How do we build stuff out? I think Trackhouse will be a huge help for us in terms of this, there, the way they approach the business and the sport. They'll be a help for us in that market. And there's just some other things that we're working on that a little bit too early to announce here, but I think that'll help with exposure and things like that as well. So the U.S. is important because it's also, it's a mouthpiece, sort of like London. London's a mouthpiece for Europe. The U.S. is a mouthpiece for the world. So we need to get both of them engaged, but we have to get it right. We have to get it right.
Well, let's talk about that. You talk about stunt. I mean, was sprint racing on a Saturday a stunt to start with? I know that's going to be a matter of opinion, and it's one that's a bit 50-50 in a lot of cases at the moment. The other point being is that I personally believe that we've got a bit of Bernieism going on in Dorna, in that digital, which is massive. I mean, Dorna are innovative. Sergi Sendra and his team are probably the best in the world for producing onboards and behind the scenes stuff. They've got brilliant technology that they're selling around the world. And yet the digital offering, for my money, isn't good enough. I don't believe Dorna's digital offering is good enough. We've got geo-blocking all over the place, which drives everybody bonkers. No one can log into anything anywhere. I'm sure you're going to have a hand on some of that. In fact, I've seen a few big thumbs up for Dan Rossomondo regarding that you've unblocked a few bits and pieces. But it does seem to me that side of things, and again, if I talk about Sky Television, particularly in the UK, Sky Television's biggest offering at one point was their digital platform. They valued that almost as highly as they did the televisual side of things, because I think they could see back in the day that was where we were all moving toward. How people receive their sport is changing massively. But do you feel that Dorna, yourself, you know, in the future, are doing enough regarding the digital offering, and presumably you've got some fairly big plans regarding that moving forward?
We're not doing enough, and we're not doing it well enough. But it's not something we're going to rest on our laurels. We're not going to say that it is what it is. So yeah. So you mentioned some things that we've looked at and addressed. I think there's going to be some other things as well. I think this is not going to unfortunately translate to you guys, because I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, but there's a movie called Field of Dreams with Kevin Costner. And the line was, if you build it, they will come. Well, that is not the way it works with sports content.
No,
if you
not.
Build it, they might not come. Okay. We need to distribute that content and get it out there. So listen, I think that, and I will go back to my interview with Carmelo in February of last year, or January, I don't even know what it was, last year, where I said to him, you guys don't have enough swagger with your content. You just don't. You just don't have it out there enough. You don't have it optimized. And I think our team recognizes that. And we have some legacy infrastructure things that we're working on, but we also have a mindset that we're changing too. So you've seen a little bit of changes in terms of how we are asking people to register to watch videos, and how we are now not asking people to register to watch videos, which is a big thing. You know, the geo-blocking is something that obviously we're addressing as well. I talked about the benefits of being a global sport earlier. The curse of being a global sport is that your rights management is all over the board. So you have to really get into that and make sure you're protecting the folks who are. It's a really fine line, Keith, between the guys who are actually, you want to expose your sport to as many people as possible, but you have certain parties who are paying you a lot of money, and you have to make sure that they're going to continue to pay that so you can do the other stuff you want. But I do think we're innovative. Sergi is great at kind of like bringing this sport. I mean, the amount of things that we have done that other sports have mimicked, I mean, is amazing. So we have to have a digital offering that matches that innovation and that technological gravitas. And we're going to get there. We're going to get there.
Do you collaborate much? I mean, Dorna obviously own World Superbike as well. You know, spreading it out. World Superbike is supposed to be one notch down from MotoGP. But I can see a time coming fairly soon with hardcore fans where World Superbikes are going to be start mounting a challenge regarding what we watch, particularly with the way things are heading at the moment with the riders that have got in there. I mean, MotoGP is the pinnacle. What is that collaboration? Have you got a strategy between the two to try and keep that differential between them? Because as...
On the technical side?
Well, I
can't speak to the technical
on the promotional side, on the technical side, on the offering side.
Yeah, I can't spell technical, I was saying. So no, on the I would say on the consumer side, yes, we do collaborate. You know, all of the folks that run the business lines for my group, you know, all of those P&Ls from World Superbike roll up into me, and we deal with the guys in Rome and whoever they might be, and Gregory and Francesco and the team. So it's really good in that regard. I think we've learned some stuff from them. If you've seen this year when we did the sprints, we put the podiums in the paddock. That is something that World Superbike did. So I am not afraid to look at good ideas and say, we need to do that. You know, so we definitely do collaborate. I think that their sport is, it is a little bit like the little engine that could. It just keeps going, and it's really good for that, Matt, in that regard. So it's also I think from my perspective, they have a fan that overlaps with us more than we have a fan that overlaps with them.
Do you have a collaboration with the teams, team bosses, team management, team PR?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, normally they're the thorn in the side of somebody like Dorna because it's like herding cats. They're all over the bloody place.
Yeah. Teams are. Well, by the way, that's the other thing I continue to reiterate to my team, my organization, is that this is not a Dorna specific problem. Teams everywhere are the thorn in your side. I mean, I've come from the NBA for 30 years. I've worked in hockey. I've worked in baseball. Like, teams are, there's always this tension between teams and governing body or teams and league. It exists. It is there. There's the ones who you want to be more innovative and the ones you want to say, can you just relax for a second? There's both. So yeah, we do have, we want to foster an open dialogue. I think, Keith, one of the probably the best thing that I did this past year was just walk up and down the paddock every chance I got. Every chance I got, like if there was a lull in my calendar, I'd walk out of the office or the truck and just start walking down the paddock, and I would see a team boss or a communication person or a PR specialist, a rider, a father of a rider, a commentator, and just talk about what they saw, what they thought, because I had so much to learn, and that's not going to stop. So I think the conversation and the dialogue that we have with teams is very healthy. It's just we have to keep doing that, keep working on that on both World Superbike and MotoGP.
How do you...
Well, let me. I know Harry's got one there. Harry's got one right in the tube there, ready to fire across. But let me tell. This is to blow a bit of smoke up your trouser leg here, Dan, if I may, because one of the notes that I made, I obviously did a little bit of research before we met you today. I've never met you before, and across the board from some management and some fairly high ups, very nice, genuine guy is what came down. I wrote it down on my piece of paper that's in front of me.
There you go.
Here.
Thank
so
you.
That walk down the pit lane, just because they won't ever tell you what they're thinking, because that's the nature of the beast in the paddock, of course. But the genuine feedback that I got from doing a bit of research over the last couple of days was exactly
that's
that. So it is very good from the point of view that you have people on side. So people that are wanting you to be successful in the direction you're heading in.
Oh, I could not. And I say it all the time, we have such a congenial paddock, and I think that they were so welcoming to new ideas, and I try to reciprocate that as much as possible, because there's no ownership over good ideas. There's no monopoly.
Do you have the power?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say, listen, again, go back to that, Keith. Like, no, if I wanted to say I wanted to put a race at night, I think Carlos would smack me over the head and say, yeah, great. No, we can't do what we can, but if there's a lot of, you know what I mean? Like, I do have the, I listen, there's no, they have not said no to me. What I'm also trying to do, though, is I am picking my spots, Keith. We are picking our spots. Where do I have capital? Where do I have opportunities to do things collectively?
I think that I have the power to do a lot of different things. Again, there's never been a no. There's been a, okay, let's talk about it. But from my perspective, the really outstanding thing that I've always heard is a willingness to change, a willingness to, it's almost as if people in the paddock, people at Dorna, people in the executive committee, they know we have this gem and they're like, Dan, let us know how we have to show it off and let us know what we have to do to show it off. And it's been great in that regard to try to really identify with people.
Just coming back to what you were saying about sort of working with teams and,
yeah,
and how that can be a sort of love-hate relationship. One of the things I've noticed, particularly with MotoGP, is access, both for fans and also for media of all types. You know, at the moment, we're trying to, you know, get booking interviews and things like that with current riders and across the classes. And some teams have been absolutely brilliant in allowing us time, you know, half an hour with whoever it might be. But some are still, you know, no matter what point of the year it might be, can be quite tricky. They'll offer you a time, but it has to be during the race weekend and it's only 10 minutes. And let's be real, you're not getting much out of anybody in 10 minutes. And the reason I think I have an issue with it is because coming from Formula One, surprisingly, it's really easy to get interviews with riders. Okay, it's still hard, but they're a lot more willing. But the other thing is, and I wonder if you agree, with Valentino Rossi's departure over the last couple of years, MotoGP's taken a huge hit with that because you didn't need to know anything about motorbike racing, but you would know who Valentino Rossi is, or you'd know, oh, he's that racer, isn't he? Oh yeah.
The quote is, he is racing.
He is racing. True.
You know?
But he's not, but not in MotoGP.
Well.
He was a personality, and I know there are huge personalities in up and down that paddock within the rider department, but it feels like they're not being allowed, or we're not given the opportunity to try and extract those.
Yeah. It is a fair criticism. It is a good point. It is something that we are constantly addressing with our guys, and I've seen market improvements, and I'll just give you a little bit of, I don't know, this is not news because it's not that news. I'm going to Doha next week. We have a meeting with the teams. And one of those things is to talk about how we can prioritize rider time and use it better to get to maximize exposure. So this will come up, I'm sure. I get it. Like, they are our best ambassadors for the sport, bar none. They are our best ambassadors for the sport. So we have to get them out there. And that's funny because coming from outside of the sport, I think we are so accessible in terms of so many different things. Like, if you see these guys in the paddock and like, there's all of a sudden, like, you know, whatever it might be, they're just very accessible. I've never, you know, it's been rare that I've heard a no from them personally either. Maybe that's because they see me as some sort of boss, but like, we are premium and we are accessible, which I think is a great position. But these guys have to be, we have to prioritize their time much better. And that means maybe eliminating stuff that we've done in the past that we were like, okay, you're right. We don't need to do that as Dorna, as MotoGP. We'll take that off your plate. You have to do this more. So I do think, Harry, it's a good point. It's something that we're addressing because I want these stories to be told. I want these guys to tell. I think what they do is so spectacular and so wonderful. I want people to hear about it. And I do want our personalities built up because sports in today's world, as you know, there's a lot of competition for eyeballs. There's a lot of competition for time. And it's not just sports, it's entertainment. I mean, we're just probably a few years on the downside of people.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Television, they called it, with all every greatest show of all time was every, but also you're competing with news programming. You're competing with walking your dog. You're competing with like going to your, you're competing with so many different things. The way to do that is to extract that personality out of people so that they can identify with these riders that I'm going to tune in for 45 minutes on Sunday. It is not a heavy ask. And now I'd love them to tune in for practice and qualifying and the sprint on Saturday and all that. And they have shown that they will do that, but we need these personalities to be that magnetic attraction for our fans.
Has there been a movement behind the scenes to kind of make MotoGP a bit more elite compared with Moto2 and Moto3? What I'm specifically talking about is Sunday's programming now. We've not got warm-ups for Moto3 and Moto2 because we've got the track presentation of MotoGP riders and so on taking up time for the audience at trackside, pretty much more than it will be for television. As a former rider, obviously, yeah, I'm very concerned about that lack of track time on a Sunday, purely and simply because I think Moto3 and Moto2 should have track time before racing on the day, just as a matter of testing time to sort out any niggling problems and so on that they may have. But is there, my question is, not about that. My question is there a movement behind the scenes to make MotoGP just that little bit more elitist over the lower classes? No,
if there is, I have not received the memo.
Okay.
No, I don't think there is. I actually think Moto3 to me is
crazy.
My wife can't watch it. She literally, she goes like, she cannot watch it. Like, she's like that. Yeah. So I know I want... I'll be honest with you. First of all, Pedro Acosta coming out of Moto2, it's like I kept telling people last year, could you please watch him? And Aldeguer as well. There's a lot of talent that comes up. So I want people to learn who our new stars are. But if you had a camera on me recording every new person, new sponsor, new media company, new television company, whatever it might be, I talk to, I'm like, please just watch Moto3 as well. Just put it on. Just put it on for 15 minutes and you tell me what you think about it. And they're all like, okay, I will. And sometimes I get texts or emails going, holy cow. It's interesting.
It really is one of the highlights of the weekend when you're watching it.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, we are running out of time with you, but we had quite a lot of listener questions here. We've asked some of them throughout the show. But one of the
priorities... It's better to ask Larry so I don't get killed on Twitter for not answering.
Well, no, exactly. I have asked a few already just in the build-up. Luke asked about Trackhouse and was wondering, as well as a follow-up to his question, what about Moto America? You say there is a plan, that you are working with Trackhouse to try and get an American rider. Are you monitoring Moto America? Are you able to work with them to see where the next talent can come from?
We saw them last in a couple weeks ago in the US. We will see them again. I will see them again in Austin, obviously. It was actually my first meeting, official meeting, when I was at MotoGP at Austin last year. It was with Moto America, with Wayne and the team there. So yeah, we are definitely in conversation with them as well.
Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there was a lot of names.
And I don't know if you saw, Harry, if you saw, like, at Austin this year, we're going to have the King of the Baggers racing.
Yes.
So that's a collaboration with them, which we think is just fun, right? This is what sports is about. So it's another good collaboration.
Yeah, Jeremy McWilliams is campaigning for a lower age limit. Yeah. So nobody under 50 is allowed to fly.
There you go.
Well, you know what? On that, Peter emailed in saying the Americans are looking to host a bagger racing support race instead of the Moto E for the US round. And seeing this focuses more on Moto E now, seeing as Moto E series in general, albeit very exciting for the riders, seems a bit dull for traditional racing fans. What are the moods around monitoring Moto E? Can we have better marketing around that, or should we just replace it with bagger racing?
No, we shouldn't. But yes, we should make it more exciting. How about that?
There's your question.
The interesting thing, though, if you talk to Neil Morrison or something, who did a lot of the, he thinks the Moto E racing was actually pretty darn good. I think, and I'm gonna say this, and I I'm sorry to whoever is going to get. It's a weird thing without sound. It's a weird thing. Like sound, I think it's, and I think it's a, it, you know, these bikes are really good. The Ducatis this year were amazing, amazing. Every rider who got on one was like, holy cow, they're so much better and so, so different. It's a weird thing. Like the sound is a visceral part of our sport, right? It's like, I get chills. I just got chills thinking about what it sounds like when these guys first put those bikes on. So I think that's a part of it. But I think we have some, look, 100% we've got to market it better. And we've got really great partners who are getting behind it. So we've got to do our bit to market it better as well.
Mm. I think as a trackside visual, there's not enough races, effectively. I mean, you've got three races. I think that if you are, and I think this is a problem for Silverstone to some extent. I mean, if you could have a British Championship race that was going to be run during the weekend as well or over the weekend, that would work quite well.
Stay tuned.
One of my worries is...
Stay tuned.
Stay Sorry, tuned. Dad. Stay tuned, he said.
Stay tuned. Well, as long as it doesn't go down the Formula One MotoGP together kind of weekend, because I kind of can't see... Well, I can see it being a spectacle.
That's a stunt.
But the problems you're going to have with it... You guys are going to be out sweeping the track before and after every single thing that's going on just to get the debris way for bikes to be on a completely different racing line.
I do love how people say those things and they're like, you guys should just do that. Oh, yeah, sure. It's easy. Sure.
It really is not easy. And the safety side of things for cars and for bikes are complete different. It's a conflict that we have all of 100%. The time. But, I mean, getting back to the Moto E type situation as well. I mean, we're obviously heading towards sustainable fuels. We're moving away. We're not going down the electric route quite so much. I mean, I think that, again, this is another coup that Dorna pulled off when they brought the electric bike thing under their wing rather than have what we had in cars, where Bernie didn't want anything to do with it and it buggered off in a different direction and produced its own series in competition with Formula One, which was never really going to work. But anyway. more races trackside. That's what you're. Are you moving towards more races trackside? Or is that a possibility? Do you think? Are you working with the likes of MSVR for Jonathan Palmer, Stuart Higgs, and that mob in the UK?
Mob is such an impolite word, especially mob. Yeah,
on purpose.
Yeah, we're talking to them. I think it's a combination of every. I think we listen. And I will say this is like, again, I'm not trying to kiss anyone's ass here, be sycophantic. We're looking at a lot of different stuff and we're willing to do things. I think it's just a matter of getting the right mix. We might fail at stuff, Keith. Like we might just that didn't work. That's okay. That's okay. By the way, I tell my team all the time, it's okay if it didn't work. Let's figure out why, what could work better, and then just put in the rearview mirror and go. So
have you had a conversation with Jonathan or Stuart Higgs? I mean, have you?
Yes. Stuart's in a lot of our races because he's obviously a steward.
He's another guy that I you know, like Dorna, I rate Stuart Higgs very, very highly, and his skills are very, very.
Big fan.
I mean, he's a very smart fella, but he runs a kind of how shall I put this? It's going to be rude, whichever way I put it. But basically, he's kind of bordering on dictator in that he makes things happen.
No.
You know, and generally, and the reason why it's been allowed to go the way it has is because generally he's always right.
Listen, that would be then called a benevolent dictator.
Well, before we get
long may it last, and long may a collaboration between. One of the problems that we have in the UK here is it's not a close enough link between British racing and MotoGP.
Yeah, I agree.
As much as. Dorna have been massive in the funding British riders here, and they still continue to do that now. Jake Dixon wouldn't even be where he is if it wasn't for the fact that Dorna were weighing in. I mentioned Jeremy Williams earlier. We're going to be seeing him in baggers. But, I mean, Jeremy was funded originally by Dorna. He wouldn't have been racing in Grand Prix if it wouldn't be the fact that they put some money in. Rory Skinner is another one that's had a little bit of cash out of it. But kind of, I feel like there's a massive disjoint between what's going on here in Britain. Sorry if you're listening from around the world. We are a global platform, and I'm talking very British-centric at the moment. But we don't we have this disjoint between British racing and Grand Prix.
Yeah.
It's okay to World Superbikes. That link seems to work fairly well. But we've kind of lost the plot when it comes to getting guys into the top classes.
Yeah, I think we're
like I said, we talked to Stuart, and I hope you'll be seeing something from us regarding Silverstone shortly.
Well, we look forward to seeing that. Dan, we've taken up enough of your time. Thank you so much. It's been such an insight to chat with you. Before we go, though, final question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who is your bet? Who's your bet for this year's MotoGP champion?
Whoa.
And we will hold you to this, and we'll come back to it right at the end of the year.
Yeah, and I the reason why I hate these questions is because I can't not answer them. I've got this unbelievable I can't help myself. I can't give the political answer. Like, everybody deserves a trophy.
I think it's the hardest question in the world.
I think this year Jorge Martin is going to win the championship with Mark Marquez a close second.
I'll tell you what, it's a good shout.
Martin's been my man for the last couple of years. And he's failed me every time.
That's
why he's 2024 the year.
Talk about a guy who only knows one way. Every time I see him after he wins a race, he comes up to me and goes, I think he learned a lot last year. I think he's got a wonderful team around him. I think he's just a big fan of his father's, by the way. I think he's just a great guy. And I think it's worried. But Mark is Mark, and Pecco is Pecco. So I think there's going to be a lot of good storylines, but I think Jorge is going to pick
Pedro Acosta.
Dude.
Let me bring a big bucket of cold water with ice in there, shall I, just for a moment, and tip it on this story. Because, I mean, what's going to make the difference this year is the collaboration regarding tyres, boring as the subject is, because they've only just really put together. It's yet to be ratified, but we're talking about we're not going to get disqualified now if you're outside of the tyre range. The tyre range is going to be
a little bit bigger.
Changing depending on what track we're on, so there's a lot more autonomy coming up team wise as we move forward. I'm pretty sure it will be ratified, but there's going to be a time penalty situation. So if somebody has not complied with 60% of the race within the tire pressure rule, so there's a few things that are going to be coming up soon, still to be ratified at the moment, but that's the underlying thing. Because I don't know about you, Dan, sorry to keep but the disqualification of someone because they've been too low a tyre pressure for 50% of the race, and we've got three guys on the podium, and potentially those aren't the three guys that are going to be the 1, 2, 3 by the time they've read the data and seen that someone had low tyre pressures. That would be a massive turn-off for the sport and for everybody watching.
You saw my face. That was we were going into Valencia, Doha. We were wasn't my great. I didn't have the greatest feeling in my stomach thinking about that. I would say the other guy that I would mention, Harry, is Brad Binder. I think he's just and he just is kind of, KTM, between him and Acosta and Miller and Augusta, I think they're going to, if I was going to give you a wild card, he's the wild card.
Okay. What this underlines is that there are so many storylines, personalities, and things to tune in.
Who's
going to
win Formula 1 this year?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Sorry.
But hang on, wait. Give us a year, because then Hamilton's in a Ferrari, and then it gets good.
There you go.
You got to get through the boring seasons before the new plot twist comes in. Well, I think it's a good time to leave it there, shall we? Dan Rosamond, thank you so much for joining us on OMG.
It's a pleasure. Take care.
So, Keith, we've just got off the phone with Dan Rosamundo. I must say, I'm won over. Lovely bloke. Took the time to have a lovely chat with us off air as well. And not afraid to, say a spade is a spade.
Tricky position he's in. I'm going to hold back a little bit on too much praise at the moment. But the general, I wasn't being too praiseworthy at the time. I mean, I think that the proof of the pudding is going to be in the eating and whatever he manages to move Dorna towards. I mean, at the end of the day, he's on an uphill slope. The marketplace for MotoGP in some countries is slipping. In others, it's absolutely flattened out. And in some, it's going to tank. Dorna have got an ongoing problem keeping momentum going. We've got a great sport, but it's lacking in so many areas. And Dan has got a fairly short window to make that work for him and for us. I mean, obviously, I was talking very much about Silverstone and the British perspective, and I apologize again to anyone listening around the world because some of you
did a lot on the US as well.
Well, that's exactly right. The US have got problems. Argentina's been cancelled now because they've got problems. You know, there are a lot of things that need writing. But for me, the way that youngsters receive their sport, the way that youngsters perceive their sport, we are missing out a massive block of people that are eventually going to move into the position of having enough money, having enough, you know, influence to be able to move our sport forward. What we've got at the moment is a load of grey hairs. You know, like me, we've got a lot of older people. The majority of people that are spending money, that are going to tracks, that are buying motorbikes, are older people. That is not good, because we're all going to drop off the edge of the bloody cliff at some stage, and we're relying on moving the youngsters through into our sport and to be enthusiastic about our sport. And that's what worries me to a great extent, is how much we're catering for those guys. We need, you know, the digital side is more important than I think any of us really give credit for. And I think that sorting that out, I mentioned in the conversation with Dad about the Bernieism. I was alluding obviously to Bernie Eccleston, who was 1,000% against digital marketing. He didn't let drivers make any kind of digital communication from trackside. There was nothing allowable to go outside of the paddock. All completely wrong if you want to connect with your younger sports fan. The younger sports fan wants to be integrated into that, wants to be a part of that. And I think that's missing massively, even in the Dorna situation, which is a great shame, because if we coordinate that with, I mentioned Sergi Sendra earlier on, I mean, he's fantastic the way that the developments they've got and the technology that they're producing really is, you know, could make our sport so accessible on all the platforms that are available. But Dan's the man, and he's got a hell of a job to do.
Well, it's like, well, we were talking, albeit in a different sort of context just before we recorded, how quick things move nowadays, you know, especially in this motorsport industry, particularly on the digital and the media side. And Dan said, you know, we want to get things right. I'm happy to fail and figure out why that didn't happen. But as you also said, he has got a limited window to make that happen, because people expect things quickly now. And well, yes, I'm sure, you know, Dan could do stuff in a given, you know, a 10-year plan. But really, this needs to happen sooner rather than later. But that's a hard task.
Again, from a British perspective, as far as Silverstone's concerned, we've already run out of time. The negative feelings regarding Silverstone MotoGP meeting are already too far the wrong side of that tipping point. We almost need a situation at Silverstone that is an explosion, in as much as come for free Friday and Saturday. It's almost an absolute radical way of thinking. Everybody can come for free on a Friday and Saturday. Parking for free. It's almost like they've got to take the hit for 1 year to bring people back. They have got to take an almighty smash in the teeth financially to make it work, to get people back on site. Because what's happened is everybody's moaning before we even get to the event. It's not even about the event. It's everybody is already whinging about, oh, I won't go to Silverstone because of this. I won't go to Silverstone because of that. And to turn that tide is going to take something massive to get everybody back on site. Yeah.
But they also need to do a, you know, not only that, but in the British press, and this goes for any track that is, you know, not meeting its demands, you need to fork out the money for your PR. You need to be getting, we need in the build up, you know, a month before MotoGP at Silverstone, on the back page of the Telegraph Sport or whatever it might be, you need Jake Dixon alongside Pecco Bagnaia and Marc Marquez, and you need to go, MotoGP is happening. What is it? Who are the people? It's free on a Friday and Saturday. Go and watch it. But that needs to be implemented across print and digital, you know, months in advance before it actually happens. And they need to fork out to hopefully in the long run make it all back and then some.
Well, we talked about it in the interview. We talked about it in the interview about NASCAR, IndyCar, and so on. Well, NASCAR has a constitution that is really fan-centric. At the end of the day, you know, they're super accessible. It's written into the constitution of NASCAR that they will do this, that, and the other regarding PR. You talked about the fact that, you know, getting interviews with riders was quite tricky, and it is. I mean, like, we've got people lined up, but it's taken a lot of effort to get to that point for OMG MotoGP. I just feel that the Silverstone situation needs a massive turnaround, and there are one or two others that might be in the same position now that we've lost, you know, Valentino Rossi, as you've mentioned already. That has made a big difference to Italian figures, you know, to the attendance figures and so on and so forth, and it will do for a while. You know, Marquez is still the biggest name, and he's still the man that, you know, you put Marc Marquez on a headline. We've noticed that on OMG MotoGP. If it's a Marc Marquez headline, it gets the hits. Unless it's Colin Edwards, he gets the most hits still.
We love Colin Edwards for president. Did well.
Did I just tell him?
Welcome back anytime.
But
I
just think that. I think Dan Rossomondo has got a massive, massive task. And I wonder if one man can persuade promoters, Dorna, teams to move in the direction they need to move in. We need a bit of an explosion in some marketplaces to make this move, to get people back and to get MotoGP on track. And I think the thinking is lagging behind what we need to start getting things, I mean, you know, from schools, from right the way through from youngsters, we need that to move forward. You know, Moto America is miles behind because everybody in Moto America is older. Everybody in British Superbikes is older. You know, the Spanish market, the reason why we see so many Spanish is because Spanish and Italians, you know, are in warmer countries and they promote their stuff from very, very young, and riders are playing, you know, alongside their school studies, they're riding motorbikes on, you know, little tiny go-kart tracks and so on. You know, the whole thing. The fact that Silverstone has basically reneged on the conversation I had with Stuart Pringle, you know, 2 years ago regarding their new kart track, and they're not interested in running, you know, mini bikes around the kart track because they might, you know, dig in the tarmac with footrests and stuff and cause a problem for the tarmac. Well, so what? You know, you've got a MotoGP coming up. You need to be promoting young riders on your home track, and that doesn't seem to be happening now. I can't see it changing. My prediction will be is Silverstone will eventually lose interest, even though it's the second biggest thing that they hold there. And MSVR, Jonathan Palmer and his group will pick it up, and it will go to Donington Park for a while. Now, there will be a lot of people that's just cheered that are listening to this and said, yeah, we want a bit of that. I love Donington Park. I've got a good relationship with MSVR. I will have until I've said this. But I still enjoy Silverstone. Is a special racetrack. It's a special venue. It's a special event. And to see it slipping downhill makes me cry. You know, I can't believe where we are with it.
Well, we know, and I know all the listeners will know how passionate Keith is about Silverstone. And you said you've got a meeting with him tomorrow. We'll see if Stuart wants to come on the podcast for a little guest. Stuart Pringle.
I had a conversation with him earlier on today, and Stuart Pringle is managing director of Silverstone. He is a man that is juggling quite a few plates. There's no doubt about that. Formula One dictates everything that he does pretty much. They've just done a 10-year deal for Formula One. MotoGP has got a while to go yet, so that's going to continue to happen. I wonder how restricted he is by others within, you know, Silverstone's management as to what he can do or can't do.
Well, you know what? Give me his email and I'll send him a line and see if I can wordsmith him onto the podcast.
Well, I mean, he will come on because again, he's a great front man. He's a very good orator. He's very eloquent. You know, I want to hold his feet to the fire regarding little track that we've got for the go-karts there, or the carts. I can't call them go-karts. It sounds like it's a bloody seaside parade. But it is something that I do think that they need holding to certain things. And I wonder why we're not seeing the kind of change. You know, they put on a good band at night on a Friday, put on a good band, albeit not for long. It's not like a proper concert, but on Saturday night as well. We've got the Day of Champions, of course, on the Thursday build-up, which I think really needs developing. That's not developing in the way that it should do. You can look at other events like Daytona. Dan did say off air, I'm not gonna spoil the confidence, but he said off air a minute ago before, as he finished, that we do have an extra something on track that's coming at Silverstone. So my question about not enough races going on during the day, not enough for British fans to get, you know, their teeth into, that will change this year. It's not quite signed off yet, but so you can look forward to that. Keep an eye out for that. But there is something coming special at Silverstone.
Yeah, there certainly is. I'm just saying, I think we're sort of nearly out of time, Keith. So unless there's anything major, I know. I know you love Silverstone, but I don't want to go down the rabbit hole there anymore.
No, I do, and I would love to see the Grand Prix back in the days when we were getting 100,000 people at trackside. But I think that, like I say, that there's a fair bit of ill will and too much bad PR that we're not getting ahead of. And I think that, you know, getting the fans back on side, it's a very important thing, and they need giving something. They need to see that they're loved and that we want them there, rather than the hardcore 45,000 people that came last year.
Yeah,
it needs to be more than that. It needs to be, you know, we need to give all the kids, anybody under 13, for free. They can come for stay there for a month, and we'll buy them all.
Give them all a free
candy floss,
free ice cream with a flake. For free on the house. Thanks.
We need something to get them back on
well,
site.
Look, thanks again to Dan Rosmondo for joining us. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to the OMG MotoGP podcast. I think we're going to sort of be back fairly regularly now, which is quite nice. As I said at the start, we've got Renita and Amy joining the show. Pete's going to be making sporadic appearances when his schedule allows, alongside myself and Keith Ewan. We have got Sam Lowes and Alex Lowes on the way in a Down the Pub special. We have also got Brad Binder lined up for you. That's an exciting one. Augusto Fernandez is going to join the show. We're going to try and catch up with Pedro Acosta about halfway through the season, but as you can imagine, he's very focused on getting his head in the game for the opening rounds, and so much more. So drop us a like, a subscribe, a comment. It goes a massive long way. We have a Patreon page as well you can subscribe to, which means you'll get early access to everything we do. And feedback is always available and welcome for how we can improve the show. But I think that just about does it for the time being. MotoGP, I think, is pretty much back now. Keith Ewan, thank you very much for your company. We'll catch up with Dan at the end of the year and see how it all folded out. I've been Harry Benjamin. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.